Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, construction projects still happening, a love story from Disney, music is in the air, how an old favorite came to be.
More jazz in Downtown Disney, new cast member masks, we discuss some little known interesting things about Disneyland and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of August 19th, 2020. I'm Tig Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Val H, Sarah G, Siona C, Josh W, all for becoming new supporters of the show. Also to Joanne A for increasing your support of the show. All of this support helps to make DL Weekly possible. Without the community of support, we would not be able to produce the show and get through this difficult time. The supporter Discord chat has been a great source of Disney magic from our supporters, like some fun themed topic days. We have Marvel Mondays going on. We've got Star Wars Wednesdays. We have trivia nights. We have trivia, daily trivia questions in the chat. All sorts of different stuff. If you would like to become a weekly tier yourself and have some more Disney magic in your day, then head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
I also want to say that this week was very nice because a few days ago, our movie night that we did was Lilo and Stitch. So yeah. I finally got to rewatch Lilo and Stitch with everybody because I had not watched Lilo and Stitch for, gosh, years and years and years since shortly after it came out. So catch up on some old things you haven't seen in a while. Watch new things. I think Marvel yesterday, they were talking about Iron Man. Mm-hmm. So always something going on. Well, whether we're talking about Walt Disney World or Disneyland, people are confused by all of the different changes going on, when the parks will reopen, what tickets are good, what things can you get reservations for, all of that kind of stuff. Our friends over at Concierge are there to help with any questions that you may have. So if you're planning on a trip or just daydreaming about a trip when Disneyland may eventually be open, contact those folks over at Concierge. Mike, James, and the crew will be more than happy to get you guys squared away and answer anything you have. I just saw that they're planning on, there was a cruise deal that just came out that you can book some cruises for early 2021 if that's something you're interested in. I know Kate, unfortunately, her Halloween cruise got canceled. So I think that, you know, this could help her maybe. So contact the folks over at Concierge. Head on over to concierge.com and don't forget to tell them that DL Weekly sent you.
Well, if you're looking to add some magic to your wardrobe, now is the perfect time to check out our friends over at All Enchanting Ears. They make a ton of different fun, unique ears as well as face masks. They also just started doing some other fun things. Like we actually just got a fun little package, surprise package from them. So Tag and I are actually wearing his and her ears themed to Disney snacks. They're super cute. Mm-hmm. We will probably be wearing them for the live stream this coming week as well. But they also have straw toppers. We got some fun straw toppers. Mine's a little mini, like mm-hmm. a little mini hat.
And yours looks like a little Mickey hat.
And then we also got some really cool hangers. So you like take these hangers, you mount them to your wall, and they're perfect for hanging your ears or hanging your ear hats. You could even hang
lanyards,
Loungefly backpacks, all of your Disney goodies. Anyways, head on over to allenchantingears.com. Be sure to use the code DLWeekly10 because all weekly tiers do get 10% off their order. So be sure to go and check them out.
I also want to do a quick program note that this coming weekend on Sunday the 23rd, we have a hangout for cast members and above, and those it's basically where they get on like a Zoom call with us and we all kind of talk. Mm-hmm. And then we have the public live stream, which anybody can look at. We post that on our Patreon page, but it's also live for everybody on our YouTube page, youtube.com/DLWeekly. And you guys will not want to miss this weekend's streams.
We have a pretty big surprise plan that we're excited to share with you guys. So the more the merrier. Also, we do have some posts scheduled for our social media that will also include the link to that live stream this weekend. Again, it's Sunday the 23rd at 7:30 p.m. Central.
Yes. So if you're ever going to not miss a live stream, Do not miss this one. And the public live stream is open to anybody, so you don't have to be a supporter. Please come to that. I think you guys will really like it.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, it's always great to hear that there is movement and excitement going on in the parks, even though guests can't see it yet. MiceChat got some aerial photos this past week that show that progress is happening in the parks. The World of Color Lagoon is bubbling away to keep the fountains for the show in running order. Some of the fixed gondolas on the Pixar Palaround are missing and are probably getting the fins to aid in steadying the cabins as guests load and unload. There's a small bit of construction going on in Cars Land with the roadwork, but the biggest exciting news comes from Avengers Campus. The Quinjet has finally been parked up on top of the new Avengers building that will have the new attraction down the road and is no longer covered by tarps backstage, which is super. We've been talking about this forever.
I'm really surprised that it's, I'm not surprised that they've placed it, but I'm more surprised that it's not under wraps, because I would think, I'm sure the paint job on a Quinjet is crazy expensive. So I would think they'd want to like protect it from the sun as long as they can. So maybe this was just a really well, like perfect timing that it just happened to not have the tarps on, and the tarps are going to be going on again later to protect it. Who knows? But still, photos of the Quinjet in like as much glory as we can have right now in the construction that is Avengers Land. So it's pretty cool. It's coming together.
I'm very excited that this is going on. The other thing I want to talk about with this construction stuff is the Pixar Palaround. It's so nice to see. We kind of talked about this, was it last week when we talked about that they'd put scaffolding up around the Emporium?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so it's nice to see that they're doing things that we didn't even know about before. The Pixar Palaround missing some of those gondola cabins. Because that was, we actually reported on that a few months ago, that they were putting these fins on the bottom so when it would come to load and unload, either magnetically or with some type of like braking mechanism, it would hold it steady, which I think is great. So I'm glad that they're doing stuff like that. I don't know what they're doing in Cars Land. It kind of just looks like they have a patch of the road kind of dug up. But I'm glad that stuff is going on, and I'm glad that it seems like we're getting back to the stuff that we thought they might do when they closed originally, because people were like, oh, they'll start all types of projects. Kind of looks like they're starting some projects, so.
Well, a new Disney Cast Life episode is live and features Zach Ridley, Walt Disney World site portfolio executive at Walt Disney Imagineering. Topics include International Friendship Day, cast members share a love story, and more.
This is cute. Did you watch this at all? So it's very short. It's like 3 minutes, 4 minutes, something like that. And the love story I thought was great. Two cast members, and they both work at in Disney World, and they got engaged like at the park or whatever. Any of that type of stuff is just amazing, and that's awesome. And so Rafa and Justin basically do this little thing where they're like, oh, isn't it great to be able to work with friends and all this stuff? And so they're kind of like teasing about being each other's best friends and stuff, which, I mean, they could be, but it's just kind of funny. So they're a great thing. And then, of course, there is the Imagineer on there that was talking about some of the things that he's working on, again, in Epcot. So it's not really a Disneyland thing, but I love these cast life things because it just kind of shows like a little bit into some different cast members' lives. And I think that that's awesome because we experience them all the time, but again, you know, they're cast for a reason. I feel like they're there performing their part, and we don't really get to know who they are, so this kind of brings that out.
Definitely.
Well, in an interesting bit of news this week, guests walking along the tram route near Downtown Disney recently heard something new. A new sound system has been installed along the route, playing the music loop from the Esplanade between the parks. The sound can be heard walking down the sidewalk, in your car, with the windows down while driving by, and when the trams are running again, on board the trams.
This is so fun. Again, a little project that we didn't know was going to happen. So it's just really nice to know that they're still plussing things around the park. I mean, we've been worried. We've talked about, you know, how they're losing a lot of money. The park's not open yet, you know, and it's kind of been, I don't know, I don't want to say doom and gloom, but it's not been all like wonderful, yay, happy news. So it's very exciting for me to know that they're like still paying attention to little details, and that things like this aren't going to be missed just because they're not bringing in as much money. So I'm glad that, you know, they're not cutting corners to kind of try and save a few dollars. Now, perhaps they had already budgeted this all in, you know, so perhaps this was pre-planned forever ago, prior to the parks closing down. But still, this could have been something that they very easily would have cut and nobody would have necessarily known.
We have someone in the live stream chat right now. Karina, she drove by the tram route with the windows down the other day and she gasped when she heard the music. See, you can hear it with the windows down. That's pretty cool. You know, this was one of those areas where I love the tram spiel. I love the tram in general. I'm a weirdo. But one of the things that was interesting to me was the fact that they decided to add some music, because before they didn't have any music. It was just the tram spiel, and those speakers were in the tram.
Sure.
So you didn't have anything along there. But I think it adds a little bit of magic. Now, another thing that's kind of cool is once everything kind of gets back to normal, on big nights like New Year's, when they stop running the trams, they let people walk the tram route to get back.
Oh, sure.
And before it was just silent. So it'll be cool to have like that atmosphere now.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Oh, this next story I think you're going to be excited about, because it's about your favorite attraction.
Well, Disney legend Raleigh Crump takes guests back to the creation of the Haunted Mansion and a little bit of working with Walt Disney himself. Raleigh talks about the beginnings of the attraction, how it progressed from a walkthrough to a ride-through attraction, and more. I am so sad because as of this recording, I have not had time to watch this. But oh, it looks so good. I just like the image that they chose for this is so exciting to me. And I know all Haunted Mansion fans probably feel the same, because the image that the still that they have for this video is basically the model, like a close up of the Disneyland model with the little mansion there. It's just like, so exciting.
Yeah, it's like made out of cardboard.
It almost looks like the paper parks.
It does look like the paper parks.
It looks very similar to the paper parks.
You couldn't find 3.5 minutes of time to watch this.
When I usually have like 3.5 minutes of time, it's when I'm at work, so it's not really appropriate.
You need to bring some headphones.
That's not very work appropriate.
It was nice to see that he was there talking about this attraction. And it's kind of funny because they're talking to him, and then one of the things they cut back, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's him. They cut back to an older version of him. And they just talk about all this different stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things with the Haunted Mansion that I think about all the time when I think of the Haunted Mansion in New Orleans Square is the 10th anniversary special, where Walt walks around Imagineering and kind of shows off everything. And there's some clips from that in here, because there's your little model you're talking about. And he's walking around with the ambassador for the 10th centennial and walking around, and then with Raleigh Crump. So very, very cool. If you're a Haunted Mansion fan, definitely go check out this video for sure. Last week, just as our podcast was posted, as always happens that way, Ralph Brennan's Jazz Kitchen and Jazz Kitchen Express reopened in Downtown Disney. At the Jazz Kitchen Express, guests can walk up and order at the counter and then wait for the food to be prepared. Social distancing markers are present, just like everywhere else. Guests wanting to dine in at the main Jazz Kitchen could get on the wait list by talking to the host or scanning the QR code to be added to the list with a smartphone. The tables are distanced well, with seating upstairs on the balconies as well as in the courtyard on the main level. No inside dining is offered. You know, have you ever eaten here? I've never eaten
here. I haven't, but I've heard wonderful things about Ralph Brennan. It's the thing I like that they're doing is a lot of the other places you have to call ahead and have a reservation to be able to go to. So I really like that it's just basically a wait list. So you just walk up and you get on the list, or you scan the code. You don't have to like super plan ahead if you don't want to. So if you're walking past and go, oh, you know what? I think Ralph sounds pretty good for lunch. Let's see what they've got. It feels more spontaneous to me, and not it's giving me like flashbacks to like trying to get dining reservations in the park. So I don't want that kind of thing to like take over Downtown Disney too. So I like that it's more casual and just, you know, that kind of thing. I do also like that not only do they open the restaurant itself, but they also opened the basic the quick service version of it as well, 'cause then if you're not comfortable sitting in a more restaurant setting, you know, even though, like we said, it isn't indoor, it is just the outdoor seating. If you're not comfortable with that, you can get it to go. You go sit somewhere else in Downtown Disney. You could take it home if you wanted, you know, whatever. So I like options.
Also, for those of you who have been missing Mickey beignets, they have beignets. And I was very excited because I went to a picnic thing for my work today and they had beignets. And they not as good as Disney ones, but they were pretty good. But the seating and stuff looks great. Of course, all this distancing stuff. I love this idea of just scanning the QR code to get on the wait list. You know, as terrible as COVID is, in fact, I got a haircut today and I was talking to the haircut lady like this. And I said, as terrible as COVID is, so many cool things have, like, people have finally grasped.
There's a lot of really interesting things that that have yeah evolved. One of the things that I kind of feel that will stick around, especially at Downtown Disney or Disney locations in general, is the fact that you now have a lot of the restaurants, when you sit down, there is a QR code and you can scan the code and the menu pops up on your phone.
Nice.
Instead of having like the actual paper menu or whatever to be that they have to go put down and they take away. You know, that's a lot of extra work when everyone seems to have a phone. You can scan it. Obviously, I do think that we still need the option of having the physical menus to hand out to guests maybe that don't have a smartphone or a phone with those capabilities. So lots and lots of cool things.
We didn't have this in the news, but I wanted to mention this. Rinse got a reprieve this week because we've talked about in the past that they're kind of in this weird zone of security. Mm-hmm. Downtown Disney gave them a booth. So they can put some of their stuff at a booth, like, past security, so it's not totally killing their thing.
I feel like poor Rinse is in not a really great location in general.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, then you add on that it happened to be, like, in the middle of security and that
temperature
health screening stuff.
Yep.
So it wasn't great in the beginning, and then it just, was worse. So it is nice that they've got the little booth. I did see that they have, like, scented hand sanitizers and stuff like that. So nice things that you can grab and use while you're there. It's not just stuff that you would have to wait to use once you get home. So that's always good. Well, the Disneyland and Walt Disney World costuming teams have worked together to create a new face mask exclusively for cast members, designed to be more functional and comfortable. The masks fit better, are more breathable, and can be washed more than 50 times. There are two styles, pleated and contoured, and multiple sizes to fit all face shapes and sizes. The masks sparkle with pixie dust and Mickey constellations. The masks are not for sale to guests, which, if they were, I think they would sell a lot of them. These masks
are so cool.
Gorgeous. You know what they remind me of? They remind me of the Magic Happens Parade. The colors. The colors that they use, and then just all the, like, the sparkles. Very well done. And the other neat thing, too, is these masks are being used at multiple parks. So it's not like Disney World has their own specific masks. Disneyland have their own specific, you know, that kind of thing. They're uniform. So I like that, because then it's also kind of bringing all of the parks, like we're in this together, kind of togetherness feel.
Well, I like that cast members basically, you know, developed it and helped work to figure out, like, what's going to feel the best, what's going to look the best. They designed it. I like the fact that they wanted to go with something that was going to be consistent. Mm-hmm. They also have, like, adjustable straps and stuff, which I think is great, because I've been fighting a little bit with my mom's, because she doesn't use the ear saver things, but she needs it to be a little tighter. But then, like, no matter how I try to do it, it seems like it's either too tight or too loose, and it's just a pain. But these look super cool, and you're absolutely right. I would totally buy these.
Mm-hmm.
They also look like they kind of go under the chin a little bit more, but they're kind of loose, which I think is good, because what happens is sometimes when a mask gets too tight around your chin, you had this happen with one of your masks, I think, where you talk
Vern
and it kind of or Vern did.
Yeah,
you talk and it kind of pulls it down off of his nose, which you don't want. So very, very exciting. Very, very cool. I hope that they come up with some variation of this, maybe, that they will sell to people.
I don't know, because there's so many different masks that they've come out with for guests to purchase. So I don't know if we'll see a variation of this for, you know, for Disney guests to purchase, or if they're going to just leave this for something, you know, just for the cast members.
There are some great deals on the 2020 merchandise at World of Disney. All 2020 dated items are buy one, get one free. This offer includes apparel and accessories as well. New mask designs sporting together again have also arrived for $6 each.
Yeah, just to note, the masks are not buy one, get one. It's just the 2020 dated items. So I'm just going to come out there and say this, but this is where my mind went. Even with it being buy one, get one, 2020 has just not been a really amazing I want to remember this year. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of wondering if we'll probably see more markdowns too, just because I don't think 2020 merch is going to be as popular. And I'm sure, think about this, they ordered this at some point last year. So
right.
They ordered the volumes that they're used to selling, which think of how many vacation, like all sorts of things. So many more people visiting Disney parks normally that are not this year. I'm sure they're just past their eyeballs in 2020 merch.
Yeah.
So I feel bad. I feel like it's a little early to be doing half, you know, 50, like not half off, but buy one, get one. I feel like it's early for that, but I do think they're kind of probably panicking because I'm sure there's a ton of this.
Well, can we also talk about the fact that, I mean, even at buy one, get one, they're still making a good profit margin on these? What?
You know what I just realized?
What?
I think those ears are technically dated because they have 2020 on the band.
Okay.
Holy crap. That might be buy one, get one ears.
Do you want 2020 ears?
Well, you can't see it. It's on the side. You just have blue sparkly ears.
Do you want these ears? Do you think these ears are nice?
I don't know. I just got really excited because I saw 2020 ears and buy one, get one all in the same frame.
I mean, it is because you got like the shirts and stuff here too that say 2020. Calm down.
They've changed my mind about their buy one, get one sale on 2020 merch.
I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. I am not generally a fan of their dated year merchandise. I feel like it doesn't look great. I believe it was either you or somebody else made the argument that it has to look good on all types of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to come up with a good design for that.
Well, it needs to look good for kids, adults.
I think that they could have dated stuff that is unique to each merchandise thing, but that's just me.
I don't know. See, the thing, I won't buy dated shirts. Like, I won't get a shirt that says 2020, but I might get, like, a Christmas ornament, because then I remember I went to that place that year. Or previously, Vern and I have gotten, like, they have little Christmas ornaments that are picture frames, so we'll take a picture of us in the parks, put it in the little dated picture frame and put that on the tree. I like those kind of dated memento things.
Yeah, but don't you think those dates, though, you could have a design specific to the ornaments and you could have a different design for the shirts. You could have a different design for the hats. Mm-hmm.
Unions representing the cast members at Disneyland continue to push for more safety measures before cast members return to work when the parks eventually do reopen. On the table is 2 weeks of paid leave if a cast member tests positive for the virus and notification if a cast member tests positive, along with testing of all the other cast members that were around the cast member that had tested positive.
I don't think this is a bad thing. I think that it would be helpful in a place of employment like Disneyland that if you and I are working at a location and I test positive, that you should be notified that somebody you worked with tested positive because you were around me. So like they should notify that person. Plus, they should also allow you to have 2 weeks of paid leave to quarantine to make sure that you're not going to get anybody else sick, that kind of thing. And making sure that people can actually have access to the tests as well is important.
The other thing, too, that the unions are discussing is they want to have secondary temperature checks, but they want these temperature checks on paid time for the cast members. So basically, as soon as the cast member arrives on property, they want them to get this secondary temperature check so that in case something is, you know, in case there is a fever, something has changed, they are minimizing contact with other cast members in case that person does need to be sent home because they have a fever at that point.
Yeah.
I do think it's nice that if we're going to require things like temperature checks, that we're going to be making sure that the cast members are paid during that time. Because I can imagine that depending on how it's set up for cast members, I'm just thinking about, granted, not the same thing, but I'm thinking about waiting in line for security.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's there's only so many people testing. Well, there's so many people doing whatever. So you don't want a cast member to be standing there for 10 minutes unpaid then be sent home or, you know, whatever.
They've already had that as a big argument before because cast members were parking over in that other lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to wait for a bus and all this stuff.
Yep.
And so they have to, a lot of people that work at Disneyland do not live right next to Disneyland. Sometimes they have to drive upwards of an hour to get there.
Yeah.
Then once they get there, they have to take a bus. So can you imagine if you worked at, let's say, 2 p.m., and you had to leave your house at noon to make sure you get there. And then you probably have another waiting for a bus and all that stuff. So if you add temperature screening and stuff like you're saying on top of that, so maybe you have to leave at 11:30 now. Mm-hmm. Well, there goes my whole day, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you. Well, as COVID-19 carries on throughout the summer, the Disneyland Resort is thinking about steps to bring cast members back once they are cleared to open again by the state of California. Currently, Disneyland is looking at different COVID-19 testing options for the 31,000 cast members at the resort. Out in Florida, cast members can get tested by appointment only at a drive-through center with test results available in 3 to 5 business days. So not exactly the best way to go about it, I suppose.
I do like, right, at my work, I have to go figure out testing on my own. So I think that it's really nice that they are providing the testing options for the cast members because they employ a small army. Like, I mean, it's like a town that they employ, right? So I think it's nice that they have locations on property specifically for the cast members, and they aren't just saying, well, good luck. you know, we'll see you whenever you get through. And like the other thing too is, if I don't want to say they have more control, but a little bit, because what if there's something going on? This happened here locally, that something was going on and that test results were coming back much slower than there was some sort of holdup. So the test results were coming back much slower. Whereas if it's something that specifically that Disney's like partnered with, and like it's just Disney using this, maybe they won't have hiccups quite like that. I mean, maybe they will. I don't know. But I just feel like this is good, because it's not, bye, good luck with your test, you know.
Oh, so you have a high temperature, good luck.
Yeah, yeah. So I like that they have this option, for sure.
I know that there's a lot of reports out there of things being good or bad when it comes to testing. I wish, two things I wish with all testing, but I would also really like for Disney testing, which I think would make a big deal for their specific use case, is one, I think rapid testing has to get better. Something that like, I can test you and within 15, 20 minutes, I can tell you the results of that test. I think that's really going to make a big difference at the Disney parks. Second is having a type of test that's not as invasive as the stick it up your nose thing or whatever that they've been using.
Those exist.
Right. But I'm saying, like, I hope that they come up with something, or I hope that they're using something like that. And then the third thing is, when it comes to not only the rapid testing stuff, but like the accuracy to make sure that you're not getting a false positive or a false negative and all that stuff. So I think speed, less invasive, and accuracy of the test, I think, are all things that need to make sure they get there.
I don't think anyone would argue against that.
Yeah. No, but you know, it's just one of those things that have been going on. So,
well, there seems to be no new end to new merchandise showing up at Downtown Disney and on Shop Disney. One of the coolest new items that have appeared on property are Up mini ears for $29.99. The ears feature multicolored pom-poms in clear plastic ears that symbolize balloons, a grape soda bottle cap to tie the bow, and a big fluffy bow which looks like clouds and the blue sky. These, I'm just going to say it, you know what I'm going to say, they're super cute. I love the Ellie badge, which is, of course, the little grape soda bottle cap. And I love the bow. I feel like I need to see them in person. I don't know how I feel about clear ears. I'm on the fence with clear ears.
My problem with this is, I don't know if I like the decoration on the clear parts of the ears.
So one of the ears has like printed adventures out there. The other one has printed a not colorful Ellie and Carl house, which is also interesting.
Right.
Because I don't think we ever see their house not color? You know, like, you know, it's always the bright colors before, you know, as they remodel it, because it was kind of fallen down and needed a lot of work in the beginning of the movie. We don't ever see it like painted like a quote unquote normal house. It's always that fun, colorful house. So it's a little weird to me that the house is just brown.
What do you think about the Baby Yoda spirit jersey for dogs?
So I don't know how I think spirit jerseys for dogs are very popular. I do think the child is probably going to be extra popular because it's the child.
Right.
And it says the child on the back, and a lot of people, like myself, consider their four-legged family members to be part of their, you know, part of their family, and to be their fur babies or their furry children or whatever. So the fact that it says the child and has the child on it, I do think it'll be popular.
And if you love the child, you'll love the child leggings that they have. And there's also a child shirt that says stronger than you think, with this kind of cartoony.
It's fun. Child. So I like the combination of these two, because I feel like it's a workout set.
Yeah.
Because it says stronger than you think.
Yeah.
There's also a new Inside Out inspired dress that was found over at the dress shop. Very fun. We also have a couple of they had some of these, I think it was last year they came out with these little card holders. But we now have one that's themed to Small World, and then another one that's just like a classic Mickey. The classic Mickey looks really nice.
The classic Mickey does look really nice. Yeah, I'm just looking at some of this stuff, and you know, there's also, it was funny, there's one here too that's a Hey Hey button down shirt, and it looks kind of like one of those, I don't know, like
a Hawaiian style
shirt. We were in the store, James and I were in the store the other day, and he goes, am I getting to be that age where I should be getting one of these or something like that? And I just was like, I don't know. But this Hey Hey, I love Hey Hey. I don't know. I might wear this Hey Hey one.
Also, now. We pointed this out in the chat. I'm like, look, Tag, it's for you. You're like, absolutely not.
Well,
you're coming
around
to Hey Hey.
I'm coming around. I'm coming around. Well, Hey Hey looks cute on this one.
When doesn't Hey Hey look cute?
That's true. I love his big stupid eyes. Also, for those of you listening to the podcast, I don't think we've talked about it yet, but I have to say it because I'm telling everybody. I did get my own baby Yoda, and I've named him my own child, and I have named him Tiglet. When we eventually get to the parks, he will be with me.
He's going to be like your Roman gnome.
He is. Don't you? You and Vern have the sock thing, right?
Vern has a sock monkey that travels, yeah.
You don't take it with you when you just go.
You're right. Yep, it's Vern's thing.
Okay. Are you okay when we get back to the parks bringing baby Yoda Tiglet with us?
I think I'm only going to be okay with it if you buy one of those backpacks that they have for like cats and dogs that has the little bubble.
Oh.
So he can be like peeking out of the bubble.
I was telling James that what I really wanted to do, and he thought I was ridiculous, is I said, I want to maybe get like a baby Bjorn. And put him like in the baby
and
Bjorn.
And strap him to you.
And he said, you know, my brother might have an old one of those. So, I don't know. I just, I also want to say, for those of you who are not in our Discord chat, specifically in the Star Wars channel of the Discord chat, a lot of people in our community have these child dolls, mm-hmm. and everybody's taking them with them, and it's just something, it's an emotional companion for the COVID era, I'm going to say.
They have a lot of their plushes have a lot of fun adventures around the house. It's kind of like Disney's version of Elf on a Shelf.
Yeah. Deanne, I like Deanne's name of her child. It's Yodi. Mm-hmm. But I also like Biddy, which is Trisha's name. James said that I should name, because he's Star Wars guy, right? And he said there's Yoda and Yaddle. Yaddle's the only other like Yoda species person that has a name in the Star Wars universe. So he's like, you should name him Yodeler.
Yodeler.
And I was like, Yodeler.
My thought, I was going to send it to you. I'm like, I'm not going to. Milo was my thought.
Milo?
Isn't that cute?
Does that mean I have to get like an Otis and I have to have a Milo and Otis? You ever heard of that movie?
Yes, but no, I wasn't thinking that.
Well, with Halloween coming up in a couple of months, new Nightmare Before Christmas merchandise has come to the parks. The first of these is a mini ears set that has a giant bat in the place of the mini bow and is mostly black with white lines like Jack's outfit in the movie. The backside is where the real fun is happening because the backside of the ears has Oogie Boogie on one side and Lock, Shock, and Barrel on the other side. There are bones on the headband and the ears are made out of a leather looking material. For the dress wearing listeners, a new Oogie Boogie dress has appeared in the dress shop in Downtown Disney. The dress, though, is $128.
These ears are fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. What a perfect bow, quote unquote, air quotes, to put on here other than Jack's bat bow tie. The other thing I really like about these ears is I feel like they're very neutral. They're not super girly. They're not super manly.
That's
they're
true.
They're just ears. So they're perfect for any Nightmare Before Christmas.
Do you
lover.
Know what the first thing I thought of when I saw this picture? You've seen the old Batman Returns movie. It reminded me of Catwoman because the bat is that really shiny looking leather. That's kind of what her costume was, is Catwoman. So for some reason, that's the first thing that popped in my head as I was like, oh, it looks like somebody cut up Catwoman's outfit.
The other thing I'm really excited about. So I feel like every year we get a different version of this, like classic Sally ears. We did get a version of Jack ears, Nightmare Before Christmas ears last year that featured Jack on one of the ears. But these, I just really love these. I really love these. I think this is a great representation of Jack. And I also love the added elements of Oogie Boogie and Lock, Shock, and Barrel on the back.
Mm-hmm. It looks
very
great.
Well done. Very
well, I
well
love
done.
That they used things to make him look like folded and
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's his dress. What do you think of the dress?
I like the dress. I'm not a dress wearing person, but there aren't too many Disney dresses that they have come out with that I don't like. I'm a fan. Now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land where producer James will try and stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to ask us 4 questions, maybe even a bonus. We will attempt to answer them and we will then get the correct answers after our discussion topic. What do you have for us this week, James?
A group of listener questions for you this week. We'll start off with the first one from Jesse S. The question is, based on their findings at the park and the picture they sent, as well as a little digging by me, what number can you find on the front of the Casey Jr. Circus train?
Ooh, I'm going to say 13.
I don't know why. See, 13 popped in my head, too, but then my brain went maybe 12, so I'm going to say 12.
12 or 13. All right, our second one from Sam S. Since we can't venture into Disneyland right now, we'll take a trip around to all the parks. What is the most popular food across all Disney parks combined?
Ooh.
Popcorn. Because I know, like, in Tokyo... Wait, are you talking about, like, international,
worldwide,
too?
Number one food.
Because in Tokyo, it's a big deal to have popcorn. They have, like, all these different flavored popcorns and stuff. And I know people buy a lot of popcorn. So I feel like popcorn.
I almost...
Oh, Liberty, that's a good guess.
I think popcorn, but I was thinking more like either a Mickey premium bar or a pretzel. A Mickey pretzel.
We got to pick one.
I'm going to go with the pretzel.
Okay.
So I feel like you could eat multiple, well, you could eat multiple premium bars on a trip too.
You could also eat popcorn. Popcorn is one of those things.
I know. Well, and like popcorn buckets, people get it at refill. Popcorn, it's probably popcorn.
Well, we'll find out.
Either way, I'm getting a craving for all these treats right now.
I'm changing. I'm hopping on the popcorn wagons.
All right. Our third question from listener Todd B. What is the only attraction from Disneyland ever moved and operated outside of the park, excluding demos at the World's Fair?
Moved and
Carousel
operated outside.
Carousel of Progress.
Excluding World Fair. Because
yeah, but it went to
Walt
Disney World.
Yeah, but it was, he said out of the parks. So I'm assuming that that means like outside.
Correct. Outside of the Disney bubble.
I'm going to say.
Outside of any Disney park, not Disneyland.
I'm going to say the Autopia cars, because there is some Autopia cars that went down to Marceline.
I'm going to say that too.
But King Arthur's Carousel is still in, because it was in Disneyland and got moved out and was operated, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it can't still be there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a miniature Autopia that they took from the park, reset up in Marceline, Missouri.
Yeah. I feel good tonight about trivia. Like, I'm doing okay.
The only other thing I thought about was, like, if there was, like the Skyway buckets or something, if those somehow got reused, but...
I don't know.
I don't think they did.
Hmm. All right, well, now that you're feeling good, time to crush your spirits. Our last question comes from listener Lee S., who asks... What attraction did Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters replace?
Oh, boy.
Oh, Circle Vision 360. Because Circle Vision
was
there.
Yeah, it was because Carousel of Progress is back by Autopia. Yep.
Yeah, that's Carousel of Progress was in where the Star Wars launch bay is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Circle Vision.
Very good. We'll see how they did, if that's the right answer, and all the other right answers after this week's discussion topics.
No bonus. This week, we thought it would be fun to try and find and dig up some bizarre, like, fun, random, very random facts about Disneyland. So to kick things off, this one may be a little bit more common, but I still think it's hilarious and genius. But this one has to do with weeds, as in dandelions.
Weeds.
And things you do not usually want in your nice, beautiful Disney landscaping. So basically, backstory of this, there are over 170 different types of weeds, in case you didn't know. And these weeds have both a common name and they also have a scientific botanical name that is typically in Latin. How this ties into Disneyland, because you're probably thinking, what in the world do weeds and Latin names
of I thought the horticulture
weeds?
Team did really well at picking the weeds out
yeah,
of the park.
Yeah, usually you don't want weeds. Well, one fun, a very fun and bizarre fact is when they were building Disneyland, it was landscaped in less than a year. And basically, they at this point, they were running on fumes for budget. And so Bill Evans, along with his wife and his brother Jack, were actually hired to landscape the happiest place on earth. And they were hired by Walt himself. They did a lot of cool things, like they moved trees around. I think we even talked about how he would pick seeds, like get seeds from other places, collect sure. seeds. And like that's how he'd save money and put some interesting plants there. They kind of went all over the country to find these trees that they relocated. And basically, long story short, relocating trees did not take very long to like completely kill their budget. And as we all know, the park was built on a very modest budget that they went way, way over.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, a lot of people didn't realize this, but they had a lot of problems, right? I think we all know that now. There was a lot of problems getting Disneyland going. And so one of the things that they kind of did creatively, since they had completely burned through their landscaping budget and there was no money left, was Bill Evans went around and put Latin tags on weeds. So there was a lot of inquiries from the guests, and they were very curious about these rare and unusual plants that had these very exotic, amazing sounding names, and they just thought, oh wow, how fancy, you know.
My mama has those in the backyard.
Yeah, so anyways, the story is true. In 1985, in an interview, Evans was asked if it was, you know, what is this real, or is this, you know, is this like, you know, just blown out of proportion. He said, nope, absolutely true. He actually had to tell Walt by the time he got around to the back berm when he was landscaping that they had run out of money and materials. So they were kind of scraping at the bottom of the barrel. And Walt actually said, I noticed you have some head high weeds out there. Why don't you put some jaw-breaking Latin names on them? So they did. So I just think it's absolutely hilarious that they, I think this is a well-known fact for, poor forgotten storybook land.
Sure.
That was just like this sad little, there really wasn't too much there, but it was just this really sad little area. But yeah, they had all these fancy names on weeds because they ran out of money. And it, like, I don't know if it's more crazy that they did that or that they got away with it and people were like, ooh and odd and like, oh wow. You know, I just think that's fun.
Wow. You know, it's kind of funny because, you know, especially maybe not in the 50s, let's say, but nowadays, I feel like you could still get away with this.
Oh, you probably could.
Because people like go to Disney and they just think things are magical. Well, you've had people that think that like bugs and stuff are animatronics.
Yeah, I think I told you about that when I was, I distinctly remember this. It was shortly after Radiator Springs Racers had opened. So there was this huge line. Of course, Max Pass was not a thing either. There's this huge line to wait for the paper FastPass tickets. And while we're standing there, we were actually in front of like Carthay Circle type area. There was a hummingbird that went and like fluttered over to one of the planters and was like drinking from one of the flowers.
Yeah.
And the lady in front of us thought, was convinced that it was not real. It must be an animatronic because we are in Disneyland. Well, California, we're in Disney California Adventure, but we're on a Disney property that must be like, wow, that's the most like life. She was, again, just like beside herself, like, is that real? She really didn't know if it was real or if it was an animatronic.
That's hilarious. So the next thing, now, there's a couple tidbits in here. Now, at first, it sounds like, oh, everybody knows about this, but I think there's some good tidbits that I want to share. So this one is all about Walt's apartment, right? Of course, Walt needed a place to stay while Disneyland was being constructed, and once it was completed so he could, you know, check out and be around and his stuff. Before the freeway was there, the trip to the park was very hard to come from, like, Burbank, because there was a bunch of small roads that were dusty and, you know, cars didn't have air conditioning, and so it was quite an exhausting trek to come all the way up from Burbank to Disneyland. So he asked for an apartment to be built. So they built an apartment above the firehouse in Disneyland, which everybody knows is still there. There's the nice lamp in the window that is always lit to let people know that Walt is always there watching. Everybody knows all that. Well, the apartment itself was decorated by art director Emily Curie to suggest the Victorian era. She had designed the lush interior of Captain Nemo's Nautilus for the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea movie that came out in 1954 and added some significant touches like hitching posts to Disneyland's Main Street. So quite a contributor to that. So if you've ever seen pictures of Walt's apartment up there, everything's kind of like this red thing. That's because it went with a rose motif used in the apartment on everything from furniture to dinnerware, since it was a favorite of Walt's wife Lillian, and keeping, of course, with the Victorian time period. So there pretty much had everything. It had a small dressing room. It had a tiny bathroom complete with an enclosed shower. It had the main living room with a kitchenette behind some folding doors. There was two fold-out bed couches. So basically, in this small area, there's a lot of different things in there. They also had some stuff that you would think of from, like, Club 33, where they had some things that they had collected on their travels, Walt and Lillian on their travels, that they and stuff that they purchased at Disneyland. and they had it there in their apartment, which was pretty cool. So, of course, with the firehouse being there, there was a fire pole that I think Walt had used to kind of go down a few times. There's a rumor or a legend that it was covered up after a child climbed up there and poked his head into the apartment while Walt was sitting there reading the newspaper. Can you imagine you're sitting there and all of a sudden some head pops up
out of the floor?
So it was a refuge for Walt when he visited the park, as well as a location to entertain friends and celebrities. Of course, later on, when they built New Orleans Square, he had planned to have a much bigger place to host people. But of course, he passed away before that. So on April 18th, 1986, Lillian notified the Disney company that she wanted to remove, quote, all personal items of Walt Disney and mine from our apartment at Disneyland. The first set of personal property, which were family pictures, hairbrushes, a portable radio, raincoats, scarves, and similar items, were removed in May, with the remainder of the larger antiques and collectibles that summer. Lillian's last known visit to the apartment was in December of 1984.
This is one of those, like, definite Disney bucket lists that one of these days I will go on a tour and I will be able to go up and see Walt's apartment. I feel like it's mm-hmm. kind of like almost like a rite of passage, or like something that all big Disneyland fans must do, because it's just like, I don't know. I feel like when you're up there, you probably just have this really cool feeling when you're up there, because this space was Walt's. Yes, the whole park, he had something to do with the whole park, but right, that was his like little oasis, right? Like you were saying, kind of like his little sanctuary. So I just think it would be really cool to be up there, to maybe peer out of the window looking down on Main Street and just kind of get an idea mm-hmm. of what, you know, what that was like for him, and like kind of, I don't know. I just think it would be fascinating to go up there.
Oh, well, and just imagine, like, what a great place to, you know, if you were Walt, what a great place to be able to sit and kind of watch, because you're seeing, in the morning, you're seeing everybody coming in and they're all excited. And then at the end of the night, you're seeing people that are also kind of excited. They're a little tired, but excited that they had this great day at the park. So I think it would be amazing just to kind of sit there and stare out and look at, you know, especially like Walt, look out at this creation and see everybody kind of enjoying it. So definitely on my bucket list too. That one and the Lily Bell are two things I'd love to go into. And, of course, like Club 33.
Yeah, definitely.
One of these days.
Definitely.
If anybody has a Club 33 connection.
Well, our next fun fact takes us actually back to one of our favorite areas of the park.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to talk about Lafitte's Anchor. I feel like Lafitte's Anchor in and of itself is something that a lot of people probably don't notice and just walk right past. I feel this way with the petrified tree, that it's there, but it's just not something that everybody's looking for.
I feel
so
like
you kind
of
have
the environment. It's like a tree.
Yeah,
you just walk by.
You have your Disney blinders on, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not Mickey. It's not like Splash Mountain. It's not fireworks, you know. So you just kind of, you're in the zone. You're going. So anyway, so Lafitte's Anchor. A little backstory on this. I think this story is just so fun. But anyways, this all started way back when the park was in its first year. Imagineer Eddie Soto proposed that he wanted some simple additions that would connect different things. So connect pirates, connect Haunted Mansion, Tom Sawyer Island, basically connect these things theme-wise. And they wanted to use references from the famous Louisiana pirate Jean Lafayette. So a vintage ship anchor reportedly belonging to one of Lafayette's ships has been displayed in Frontierland for more than 60 years.
Wow.
The interesting thing, so obviously this showed up before other pieces showed up, because in 1955, there was this big celebration. The celebration started with the Disneyland band. There were dignitaries. There were actresses. There was a stagecoach with the Frito Kid, which was the mascot of the Casa de Fritos eatery. Mm-hmm. Anyways, whole big pomp and circumstances. Even though the parade was over, there was also members of the Marine Corps that were from New Orleans that happened to be in the area because of training that were kind of joining on the celebration. Anyways, bringing up the rear of this celebration was the original cast from Slewfoot Sue's Golden Horseshoe Review. Well, all the cheers and everything, they approached this anchor that was lying on its side, and it's tilted slightly up, kind of at an angle. Dorothy L'Amour was the famous actress that was kind of like the person of honor. She christened the anchor by breaking a bottle filled with water from the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico.
That's cool.
So anyways, there's a plaque near the anchor that stated Lafitte's Anchor, said to be from a pirate ship commanded by Jean Lafitte in Battle of New Orleans, January 8th, 1815. It's also said that Lafitte's privateering ships left a wake of blood from mainland to Bateria Bay, but don't believe everything you read. Walt was later quoted saying, "We found it," meaning the anchor, "at an antique store in near New Orleans." So, yeah, it's so I love that the plaque actually says, "But don't believe everything you read." Yeah. So basically, we're telling you that this is this super fancy, like, anchor of the, you know, infamous Jean Lafayette.
This is an authentic thing from New Orleans.
But don't believe everything you read.
Yeah.
I love it. I think that's hilarious.
See, this is what makes Disneyland great. You got all these, like, little things like that. It's just
right. Well, you know what? Amazing. It's all about, right, atmosphere and environment. Yeah. So who cares if that's a weed? You're making me believe that it is some fancy plant. Same thing with this anchor. So what if you found it in an antique store? You are now making me believe that this is from the pirate. Yeah. Very
cool. I'm with you.
Very cool.
So we've covered a lot of this next one on the podcast as time goes on, but there's a couple interesting things in here, and I'm going to leave this one on a sad note, but we'll start in the beginning. So King Arthur Carousel. So the carousel was an 1875 merry-go-round that actually originally had giraffes, deer, cats, as well as horses, was built by Denzel in Philadelphia. It ran for decades since 1922 in Sunnyside Beach Park, also known as Sunnyside Amusement Park, in Toronto, Canada. The park was demolished in 1955. Well, before the park was demolished, Ross Davis actually saved it for the creation of Disneyland. Walt never saw the carousel in person until it arrived in Los Angeles. Can you imagine, like, get this thing, but then, like, whatever. So all the outer row horses were standards, but Walt wanted them to be jumpers and have nothing but horses on it. So Imagineer Bruce Bushman, who designed the concept art for the attraction, was given the assignment to make the adjustments, like sawing the legs and repositioning them, as well as creating a fourth row to accommodate more riders. Arrow Development, which is well known for doing a lot of the original attractions for Disney and still does some attractions, did all the work refitting the mechanical elements like the crankshafts. A few years later, Bud Hulbert helped build with the bull gears, since parts no longer existed for machines like this when they broke, which is just crazy. Also, Bushman located some vintage horses underneath the Coney Island Pier and installed them, along with some additional horses he obtained from Whitney's Playland in California. There were a total of 72 on the attraction, with more than a dozen other hand-carved horses as backups. In 2003, the wheelchair-accessible bench and ramp were installed, so there's only 68 horses. Wurlitzer model number 155 played music until it was replaced in the 1983 renovation of Fantasyland. Amazing. We've talked about this before. They used to have different color horses as well, black, tan, gray, brownish, red. They decided in 1975, after guests preferred the white horses, to paint them all white. And other changes at the time include the canopy, in addition to the nice hand-painted murals. In 1955, here's the sad part, there were 4,200 operating carousels in the U.S. Today, less than 200.
Yeah, which is crazy, because think of it. There's two in Disneyland. We've got Jessie's Critter Carousel, and then obviously King Arthur's Carousel.
Well, and there's one at Disney World, so three of the 200 are owned by Disney.
Yeah, and just crazy.
I'm trying to think if there was any more. I feel like we're probably, like, missing one somewhere. But anyway, still.
So this last story is super interesting and something that I was pretty excited and nerdy to learn about. What do you think Doctor Who in Disney, and specifically Disneyland, could possibly have in common?
Well, let's pause, first of all. Let's take into account that the Venn diagram of Doctor Who fans and Disney fans may not be very large.
You don't think
what
so?
What is Doctor Who, for people who may not know?
Good,
or who
good,
is Doctor Who?
Good point. So Doctor Who has to be one of the longest running TV series ever, but it is a British show that basically is about this man, the Doctor, who is an alien, but he's a time-traveling alien, and he does good. I don't know how else to, like, put
and
it in a box.
And he travels around in a blue police box.
Yep, so it looks kind of like a phone booth, I guess, would be a good way of saying it, but it's blue, and that's his
time machine.
So he can park it anywhere, and nobody is any the wiser. It doesn't look like this big spaceship. But yes, he is a Time Lord, so he can travel in his TARDIS anywhere in all of space and time.
The best thing about Doctor Who is it doesn't take itself too seriously.
No, it doesn't.
So if you ever watch it, it's kind of sci-fi and it's kind of corny, but it like it knows it is.
Yep, yep.
But that's what makes it great.
Very,
anyway,
very good if you have not watched it.
I don't know anything about this, so I am going to wait in anticipation as you talk about this, because I am also interested in what Tomorrowland and Doctor Who have to do with each other.
So multiple things. There is a long history here. Oh. So Canadian producer Sidney Newman, who was actually responsible for initiating the creation of Doctor Who in 1963, was actually offered an animator's job at the Disney Studios in 1938. However, he did have to turn it down due to visa complications. So there's thing number one.
So Doctor Who would not have existed if he didn't have visa complications.
Yeah, exactly. Doctor Who very well could not have existed if... if this would have gone through. The other thing, too, actually, in 1974, there was a proposal for a Doctor Who episodes to take place at Disneyland, where the Doctor would be tracking down an alien. The thought was that Disneyland is a pretty alien or foreign place, so it would be a perfect place for a real alien to try and hide and blend in. Unfortunately, due to limited budgeting, the show idea was killed.
Wow.
So that's thing number two.
Darn, because like that would have been super cool.
Yeah. The one that it's like mind blowing, boggling to me was in the late 80s. Michael Eisner, as we all know, at that time was the CEO of the Disney company. He was looking for different franchises to purchase, and he actually made several attempts to buy the rights to Doctor Who and its library, back catalog. But they actually had plans. This is what's crazy to me. There were plans for a walkthrough attraction at Disneyland's in Tomorrowland at Disneyland that would have taken guests through the inside of a TARDIS. There were also discussions for a film with an elaborate official announcement of this, of the new Doctor and of this partnership to be made at a special press conference in Tomorrowland. Disney at that time was looking at other options, and they actually eventually did not partner with Doctor Who, but partnered with George Lucas instead.
So we could have had Doctor Who, but we got Star Wars.
Isn't that crazy?
Is crazy.
First of all, can you imagine not having Star Tours and now Galaxy's Edge?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, like, that would be Doctor Who themed potentially instead?
Hmm.
I don't think we would have gotten an entire land. But Star Tours exists because whatever, because they were also in talks with the Doctor Who people.
Sure.
And that didn't work out, and so they went, or I don't know if that didn't work out, and that's why they went down with... Or that's why they then partnered with George Lucas, or if George Lucas is, if it made more sense, whatever. But they were in talks with George Lucas and the Doctor Who people at the same time. I just think that's crazy.
Are you going to share these last two paragraphs? Because both of those are very interesting to
me. Go for it, yeah.
So, in 1987, the seventh Doctor, because again, with Doctor Who, he can regenerate into different bodies. Mm-hmm. So this is the seventh iteration. He appeared in a 3-episode serial titled Delta and the Bannerman. The Doctor and a bunch of aliens were to spend a week at 1959 Disneyland. However, when their nostalgia tours bus hits an orbiting satellite, they all end up at a holiday camp in South Wales, which was more appropriate for the budget. And I did not know this.
No, yeah, this is another interesting one.
The first unofficial Disneyland Gala Day gathering, named as a reference to the Doctor's home planet of Gallifrey, by founder Amy McCain, took place in January 2014. There have been 5 other events. The last one was in November. The event is one of several unofficial cosplay days, including Dapper Day and Bats Day at the park. I did not know that there was like a...
I didn't either. I think
Doctor
it was a
Who
very
day.
short run thing. Because, I think it just was there for a couple of years, but it's crazy. I don't know. I never would have put Doctor Who and Disney together, and never would I have thought that Doctor Who could be in place of Star Wars at the park. Crazy.
Wow. Like, I'm on Galladay.com, and they've got all these people. Like, this is a giant photo. This is like a Bats Day or a Gay Days, even.
Dapper Day.
Mm-hmm. This is crazy. They had a costume contest and... Is there any? Okay.
Lots of Doctor Who Disney fans.
So 2018 was the last one that they had. Darn.
Crazy.
That is so cool,
though. Very, very cool.
Would you have gone to one of these?
I think, it's interesting because I feel like Doctor Who fits in anywhere. I've been to Renaissance festivals where someone dressed as one of the doctors walks past and you don't feel like it's out of place because if you know the premise of the TV show,
he could be anytime,
he
can
be anytime, anywhere, any place. So,
okay, I know this is a Disneyland podcast, but we've never talked about this, so I'm just curious. Who has been your favorite doctor?
Tennant. I think David Tennant was great too.
My
favorite, followed by Matt Smith.
Me too. Did you want to pipe in quick, James?
And Christopher Eccleston is underappreciated. He was finally coming into his own at the end when they decided to move on. So I don't know if he was like aware that his time was done and he just relaxed into the last couple of episodes, but like he was coming into it so well. Another season, I think he'd be remembered totally differently.
Maybe.
Christopher Eccleston's doctor is the reason that doctor got me into Doctor Who. And David Tennant's the one that like really made me fall for the character. But I feel like if Eccleston didn't exist, then Tennant wouldn't have.
Was also a strong companion, which made it kind of hard to compete.
Well, Amy Pond, I think, is the best.
Really? Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I liked her and Rory together.
I don't know.
But anyway.
Coming soon, DL Weekly goes Doctor Who.
Yeah.
One last thing I want to say is one of the things that works for David Tennant, though, is people loved him so much that I felt like that they did a lot of stories that like went really well. So like when he was regenerating, they gave an entire episode almost of him saying goodbye to everybody, which like pulls at the heartstrings. So I feel like nobody else really gets that opportunity, but his doctor did. Mm-hmm. So it was really heart-wrenching because he went back and saw all the companions he had and like, you know, all these different things. And so I just... great storytelling in that one. So, and sometimes the storytelling with Doctor Who was not great, and sometimes it was wonderful. So, you know, it's like every TV show, right? Well, what did you guys think about that? Are there some other things out there about Disneyland that we've never talked about or are crazy, like the weeds?
I love the weeds one. And the anchor.
And the anchor. Let us know. Send us an email, feedback@dlweekly.net. You can also comment on our social media. Let us know. If you happen to be in the Discord chat, talk to us about it in there. But now it is time to return to Trivia Land, where producer James is going to give us the answers to this week's trivia. How did we do this week, James?
I mean, you felt great. Isn't that what's important?
I think we did well, too.
Wow. All right. Our first question came from listener Jesse S. The question was, what is the number on the front of the Casey Jr. Circus train?
Except maybe not this one.
Yeah.
You said 12 and 13. The two answers that I found confirming one of Jesse's was 7 or 9.
Oh.
So, but those are the only two that pop up.
It's not even right if we add them together.
Yeah, darn.
Those are the only two that are popping up in pictures, so there could be more.
Interesting.
Someone might have to go and watch that attraction for like 3 hours when it opens up to let us know, right?
Maybe. You don't have to watch it that much. You just have to wait till they bring out however many. Don't they only have, they probably only have two train cars on that limited track anyway.
Yeah, I gotta imagine there's not too much, so.
Okay.
All right, second question came from Sam S. It was, what is the most popular food at the Disney parks worldwide? Teresa, your gut was getting you to the right place. You should have stuck with the Mickey premium bars.
Really?
Chocolate-covered treat is the number one food item sold in Disney locations worldwide.
Do you know what number two is?
I feel like popcorn makes more sense. Because, right, maybe it's just me. Me, I eat one, if I have one, which I don't have one every trip, I will only eat one Mickey premium bar. But popcorn... I feel like people get popcorn would be more likely to get popcorn multiple times.
Plus, that popcorn smell, I don't know, you know if it's just me, but that smell always makes me want to buy popcorn.
Do you know what it is? Mm. Popcorn's probably more popular. However, you buy one popcorn to share with your family.
That's true. You have
to buy four Mickey premium bars so that everyone has one. I bet you.
I don't even think that the premium bars are that great. I know, it might be heresy.
You take that back. I have some in my fridge or freezer right now. You can have one when you leave.
Guess he's not having one of those.
I was so excited. I was at Walmart.
They have a Walmart now?
They're cheaper at Walmart than they are at
Target.
Target, they're like $7 or $8 a pack for six of them, and this one's like $1 a bar.
Oh.
All right, moving on. Next question was from Todd B., who asked, what is the only attraction from Disneyland ever moved and operated outside of the park, excluding demos at the World Fair? You're both right. The Midget Autopia was donated to his boyhood home in Marcellin, Missouri.
It was the Midget Autopia. Yeah. I thought so.
Sweet.
You got it exactly right. And our last question from listener Lee S., what attraction did Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters replace? The answer, there's more than one answer to this question. Buzz Lightyear was built where the queue for the rocket rods was.
Right.
But that ride had been closed for 5 years when Buzz Lightyear opened. The area had been the Circle Vision 360 Theater from 1955 to 1997. The only attraction that actually closed because of the construction of Buzz Lightyear was the American Space Experience, which was a group of NASA exhibits that featured the Sojourner Mars rover that landed on the planet in 1997.
Yeah, because where that display was is where the Fast Pass machines were.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure.
That's where they had the... Because I remember seeing the like NASA thing there. You know who probably could have told us that? Ace.
Oh, I'm sure.
I bet you he knew that one. A lot of history for you to join the Space Ranger Academy.
Thank you so much to Jesse S., Sam S.,
Todd B., and Lee S. Lots of S's.
Yes.
Yeah, so if your last name ends in S or any letter for that matter, I'd love to ask your questions on this podcast. Send us an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic. And don't forget to watch our live stream on Sunday.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.